Can you hear me?
Turn the audio
I
up.
got him up. I got him up.
Keith, can you hear me? Keith, can you hear me?
Hold on, man. I'm trying to see what why I'm what's happening here. Hold on.
I just want to make sure audio. Keith, are you there? Yeah, but we can't hear him though. We got to get the audio to make sure. Keith, speak back. We got a minute and 16 seconds. Clark, where's the audio? Nope. All right, say something again, Keith.
Check, check. 1 2 1 2
Okay.
All right, welcome back to Community Voice. And wow, okay, you can see me now. Look at me, I got my WNOV gear on. You know, I'm in uniform today and the whole thing. Hey, we're joined in studio by Mr. Antonio Butts. He is the executive director of Walnut Way, the conservation corps. What's happening, man?
It's all good. All good. No complaints. If I start complaining, I'd be wrong, man. I'd be wrong for complaining.
What old folks say, and nobody gonna listen anyway, right?
Yep, yep. I acknowledge it's a lot happening, but I'd be wrong if I complain.
Yes, I heard that. Hey, man, are you originally from Milwaukee?
100%. 100%. Grew up right there, right here in the North Division neighborhood. Went to Hopkins Street School. You know, went to Steuben Middle School. Finished up at Custer. I did about a year, my freshman year at North, but Mom was like, you got to come up out of here. You're a little too easy to influence. So got closer to home, finished up. And basically, you know, growing up around the neighborhood, a lot of community organizing, civic responsibility, all that stuff was sort of built in. It was a lot more community neighborhood organizations around to get involved with, whether it was the clubs, CYD, YW, you know, just tons of them. And so, yeah, just growing up in the neighborhood, man, I always had a tie to civic responsibility, trying to figure out how to be a part of the solution, but also, you know, being cut up and scarred along the way. But here to talk about it.
Okay. Hey, tell us a little bit about Walnut Way.
Yeah, Walnut Way been around for about 25 years. It's a neighborhood organization, kind of in that tradition that I was just talking about. Specifically, you know, it's place-based, meaning that the neighborhood where most of the work is done is called Lindsay Heights. It is also that North Division neighborhood. So the boundaries around it are 6th Street on the highway side, 20th Street on the west, Walnut on the south, and then on the west side it's Locust Street. So that's about 110 square blocks, about 7,000 residents. And the organization really been focused on how do residents take responsibility for everything, you know, in the neighborhood that they possibly can, you know, on the ground from their houses all the way to the municipality, all the way to the state house in Madison. And so that,
No, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and that involved, you know, those a couple key things. Basically, is that community engagement, creating spaces for residents to come together, prioritize their issues, use the infrastructure of the organization to see that through. It could be a garden, it could be renovating the house, it could be any a number of things, but residents at the center of it and leading the work. This whole piece about environmental justice, environmental stewardship, you know, is really important to us because we know that what's around you, what you look at every day, it has an impact on your overall health and well-being. And of course, economic development, right? Creating prospects for the organization to be able to sustain itself, but also creating them same opportunities for residents in the neighborhood to also do that, whether that's home ownership, whether that's gainful employment, whether that's entrepreneurship. It really doesn't matter what it is, meeting people where they are and making sure that they have access to the resources and the tables that allow them to really be able to meet their aspirations.
You know, this whole issue around environmental justice, we don't talk a lot about it, I think, or we don't talk as much as we should about it. Things like when we look at probably people who are on the lower end of the economic ladder, they tend to be in areas where there is, you know, environmental contaminations, brown spots, things like that. Yep. So I'm going, so how do you do your work around those kind of issues that affect that particular community?
Yeah, like you were just alluding to, it's all about place. So depending on where you are, there may be different types of issues, whether that was the old facility that had some contaminants around it that still impact the soil in your neighborhood, or whether it's the actual highway that runs directly through the neighborhood that people talked about, you know, for decades, that really ran across the Rust Belt in the Midwest. And, you know, the air pollution that comes from that. And there's a variety of impacts around those things. But, you know, what typically triggers events is those actual health impacts, whether it's increases in asthma or it's, you know, health-related events from bad water. And so just meet the issues where they are, quite honestly. And it's a number of groups across the city who are lifting this work in a different way probably than they ever have in Milwaukee. And the way I describe that is maybe from my perspective, historically, the work has been really direct service. And that's really important, you know, where people are and how can you help them in that immediate issue. But organizations across the city, especially in the heart of the city, have really been working on advocacy pieces that deal with the work upstream, meaning where the decisions are made, where the policy is made, who are sitting at those tables, what are the rules and procedures that they follow, and how do we find a seat at that table or bring a seat at the table to influence our issues and get those on the table as well. So, without going into the heavy specifics, to your point, it's geographic. It depends on where you are. And it's really important to have some sort of community mechanism, community group, somebody to be able to band around or gather with to take issues head on, regardless of what they are.
You know, one of the things in terms of environment is housing and the issue around lead dust and lead paint.
Yep. COAL, Coalition on Lead Emergency, has been deeply involved in that work for quite a while. A lot of the municipal work that's been happening around lead and the dollars that have been allocated to it is because of groups like COAL. And as we know, that is critically important here in Milwaukee, not only because of Lake Michigan, but also because of our history and the issues we've had around water. But again, when you think about lead and you think about air quality and a number of other things, there are a ton of fronts for us to fight on or to organize around, I would rather say, and that stay present, you know, so that organizations like COAL can stay at front and center around those issues to keep the momentum that they pulled together going. And then our groups and all of the other groups that's connected in the neighborhood be able to lift each other that way. So COAL is pushing on lead. Walnut Way and Wisconsin Eco Justice Builders is pushing on energy. And then, you know, there are a number of different groups, but we're all working together, quite frankly, to address these issues and make sure that we're present. And when we need to call on each other, show up for each other.
You know, one of the things as I was reading background here, you talk about the We Energies, you know, rate hikes and things like that. Are you familiar with the initiative that Alderman Bowers is doing in terms of making We Energy owned by the city as opposed to making it the standalone utility, which is basically a monopoly?
We're a little bit, not necessarily specifically with the approach that he's describing, but we have been in conversation with various groups who have an interest in that and, you know, would like an alternative other than what we have. I think just to pull back, the issue is built around here in Milwaukee. There's only one place that you can purchase power from, the utility, which is We Energies, and that makes it a monopoly. Across the country, there are a number of, you know, states and locations, and even here in Wisconsin, there are other options. And so the heart of the matter is, without any options, then what real choices do you have? And so when we think about the initiatives and the work that you just described, it is really just trying to come up against the fact that there are no other options and what can be done around addressing the issue of We Energies being a better corporate actor, especially here in Milwaukee, to really make a difference. And so those conversations have been going on for a long, long time. Quite frankly, Keith, the conversations around the utility being public more than 100 years old.
Oh yeah, and I, you know, when I was having this conversation with Alderman Bowers, I pointed out to him, people who have pensions, right, or have investments, usually one of the safe investments in terms of being able to not lose money, but also to make money is in utilities. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how we're all kind of the symbiotic kind of relationship that we have in terms of a certain segment of the population who would benefit from utilities being a monopoly, and then the being able to expand it so that there's a greater good because we have so many people who are impacted by the cost of energy.
Yeah, just as far as, you know, We Energies has seen profits for the last 20 years. So when we think about, you know, right sizing or making adjustments around really making sure that everybody has affordable energy, reliable energy, you know, trees are trimmed around wires, you know, those dollars that you talk about, the investment that stabilizes one community and destabilizes another community is exactly what we're talking about. And the Wisconsin Public Service Commission is the regulatory body in Wisconsin that's responsible for that. And that's where the actual work is taking place. So every 2 years, We Energies has to come before the Wisconsin Public Service Commission to request to increase their rates or to make a rate adjustment. And in those conversations is where the rules are being made about cost allocation and how the actual rate is actually formulated. To be a little bit more clear and feet on the ground, where data centers are going to be, those expenses are going to be covered. Who's actually going to cover those expenses? And that's a big part of what we're dealing with now because We Energies just opened up a new rate case in June. We just closed a tariff case, but without getting into too much of the technical stuff, in this recent tariff case, the Public Service Commission essentially put a fence around data centers and said 100% of all costs must be paid by the actual data centers and tech companies, and no cost should make it to residential ratepayers. And so in this new rate case, we have to hold the line on that. And so as this issue continues to trend and more folks are showing up, like the folks who showed up at Midtown, you know, and really serious about what could possibly happen there, the stage for these conversations have been set since our conversations with you in 2022, when we first came here and started talking about utility rate cases. So we're as a community, we're in a very strong position just in terms of our ability to engage and influence what happens at the regulatory level. The conversations and relationships with the utilities and all the stakeholders around it are actually in place. So we're not starting from ground zero, whether this is the data center conversation, this current rate increase conversation, or what have you.
Well, can I ask just kind of a geek question here just for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you say that they're responsible for their costs, the demand will shoot up the prices other places. Is that an ancillary kind of?
No, it's both and.
Okay.
It's both and. And when you've allowed us to come in several times over the last few years. About 2 years ago, we came in here and we talked to you about a percentage of income payment program, where we were talking about regulatory policy that would create an affordability ceiling. So people on fixed income, people who didn't have a large income would have basically a ceiling on their bills. So to the point that you were just making, when we think about how can this thing be brought under control, especially with the rise in data centers, is policy that basically lock in affordability. No different than what we hear about, whether we're talking about rent controls or whatever, but we don't have those in the utility space. And as you all know, energy is an essential utility, just like water. I just found out that, you know, water is the only utility that we consume. That was interesting. I thought that was, to me, that was pretty interesting.
Oh, so let's do this. And I want to kind of keep in the vein of this to really talk about the gubernatorial forum that you have and around these issues. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about that when we come back from break.
Yes, sir.
All right. Joined in studio by Mr. Antonio, Antonio Butts. You related to the Butts that.
It's about Eddie Butts.
Not Eddie, but I love the music. The other Butts, that's the electrician. Respect him and what he got going out here. The carpet company, you know, I was on Hopkins, so I grew up right there. The Hopkins Street School. So, you know, but we all connected and related. I used to just tell people we connected from somewhere in Mississippi.
These other Butts, they're from Georgia.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Mr. Antonio Butts, he's the executive director there at Walnut Way. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Keith, we live.
All right, welcome back to Community Voice. And again, we're joined in studio by Mr. Antonio Butts. He is the executive director of Walnut Way. And so we're talking about, we're doing advertisements for this gubernatorial forum that you're having Saturday. Tell us a little bit about that, the genesis of that, and what you hope to derive from that forum.
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me on the air. This connected to the work that, you know, we've been doing since we've been in existence. But again, especially around this work that started when we got involved in these rate cases and really figuring out, you know, where are we going to have some influence to really make a difference. And so, again, I keep referencing these other conversations that we've had with you. So back in 2023, we had a conversation with you and it was primarily about, it was right after Souls to the Polls that really essentially ensured that Evers got back in the office. We had started conversations with Evers' office about this healthy homes work. And so we had talked to you about Evers had put in his budget $7 million for his Healthy Homes Initiative, Walnut Way, and, you know, community-based organizations to work together around helping individual households with issues around energy efficiency, weatherization, and otherwise. And so it's really just coming out of the spirit of we have to be able to influence at this level right alongside all of the other work that we're doing. And so on the 27th, this coming Saturday, we're having our Vote with Wisdom gubernatorial forum. We've invited all of the candidates. We have confirmations from all of the Democratic candidates. They'll be there. And what we've done differently this time, though, is we're looking for policy commitments, right? Commitments around water, commitments around housing, commitments around data centers. And again, as I was talking about earlier, we know that the Public Service Commission is really integral in the energy space, in the water space, this entire regulatory space. The governor appoints the commissioners. And so there are three appointments that have to be made. And so this next governor will be determining who those commissioners are, and that's really important. But again, just pulling back a little bit, what we've done different is we've asked the candidates to answer questions, and we've created a scorecard. So before the forum even takes place on Saturday, all of the candidates have answered a series of questions. We've created a scorecard on our issues, and it's currently posted now on walnutway.org. So each of the candidates have answered a series of questions that are related to the issues and challenges that we have in our community. They've already answered those questions. They're posted on our website, and it's also going to be opportunity for community to also respond to those questions. But what this does is sets the table. So now we have their responses to the commitments that we want. We'll have the forum, and as we move into the primary and move into the actual election, we'll basically have the receipts in order to move forward and hold not only them accountable, but ourselves accountable to the commitments we made to move this work.
You know, I think a lot of times people don't make the connection between your politics and then public policy, right? And we saw on a national level where this current administration has gone in and did all type of deregulations. Now people say, oh, what's the big deal? Big deal is it impacts your environment, your drinking water, the air that you breathe, all these things that becomes real important. And Wisconsin, which for many years had a reputation for being very progressive, being very environmentally forward thinking, right now, because of the control of Republicans, we're seeing that there's a retreat on those things. Like most people don't have, why is clean water important? Because we drink it, you know? I mean, our survival, as you just said, is the only thing that, the only utility that we consume. So it becomes important in terms of what's happening in the environment. Again, the air that we breathe, you know, the carcinogens that can cause cancer. So it becomes a real important discussion. You said you had commitments from all of the Democratic.
Yep, all of them. They're fully committed. They've also all submitted their responses to our questions. So everything is set and really in position. I think it's really significant that in the public discourse, in the history of the gubernatorial elections, that Souls to the Polls is literally credited with helping Evers get across the goal line. I mean, that is huge. And that speaks to what our political power really is and capacity that actually exists. And so what we're talking about is bringing that to bear this time again in an even more organized way. So we're partnering right alongside our environmental justice and neighborhood partners, the Metcalfs, the Sherman Parks, the Harambes, but we're also partnering with Lanier and Lewis and really helping us, who are the tip of the spear around these things. And we're saying, hey, we're going to get in line and we're going to be part of the caboose that helps us get over the edge, get over the hump, get people involved so that we can show up with our really clear policy commitments that we want to see sought through in an organized way so that, you know, we're not separate as we advance forward. We do it together. recognizing each other's strengths and abilities to actually make it happen. So that's what Saturday is actually about. So everybody will be there. We have Shannon Sims, who will be the moderator on that day. And so we're very excited to have her, who has done these forums and other types of forums like this in the past. And from what we can see, the space holds about 600 people. Right now, I think we're a little over a few hundred RSVPs in terms of people going in and literally RSVPing themselves on walnutway.org's website. But the commitments from coalition partners, I mean, we're expecting a real full house just in terms of the actual walk-ups alongside the RSVPs. And so, yeah, we're really excited about what we're going to do and then what we're going to do to keep that momentum after Saturday, which is important.
That's Saturday, June 27th at North Division High School. The doors open at 9:30. The forum begins at 11 a.m. Do you need to register for this?
You do not. You can register in advance to make sure that, you know, RSVP so that you come and your seat is secured, you know, but we'll take people who walk up, allow people to join who walk up for as many seats are available. We really want people in seats by 10:30. We really want people in seats by 10:30. Around 9:30, the doors will open. We'll definitely have refreshments and resources. It'll be everything you would expect us to have on the front end. But we really want to ensure that we do this in a way that's constructive. So when 10:30 arrives, we're almost going to be closing the doors. And so we got the logistics and everything coordinated really well with the local authorities, with our in-house team. And we're prepared to receive and take care of folks when they come in and ensure that they really get a chance to hear directly from these gubernatorial candidates in a way that informs them so that we could take action afterwards.
You know, one of the things that's on one of your, I wouldn't say agenda items, one of the things that you're doing in your organization. Tell us a little bit about the possibility of acquiring the SDC properties.
So yeah, the SDC Social Development Commission recently dissolved, a CAP agency responsible for a whole set of safety net issues, from housing to energy to workforce. You know, we all know recently dissolved, and that property where the headquarters was located is right there on 17th and North Avenue. But folks who've been around know that that property also has, you know, history that goes back to child welfare, history that goes back to J.L. Marcus. So that particular location, it in itself, it just has an interesting, very rich history. But for us, it's one of key commercial corridor locations in Lindsay Heights. And so when you think about, you know, the sites that are located in the area that we could use to turn around, to be catalytic around our housing work, our energy work, our coalition work, a place to bring those together, but also do a really huge renewable energy project on that site because it's multiple parcels. But we've been in negotiation now, good faith negotiations now, since the property went into receivership with Forward Community Investments. And so there are other people and other folks interested, and we've been having conversations about how to collaborate there as well. But our goal is to create a healthy homes hub where essentially state agencies, municipal agencies, community-based organizations who are involved in stabilizing housing across the city, especially for individuals and families who are current, you know, owner occupants and have older properties. We want to really replace that resource that SDC was providing. Quite honestly, you know, before this all happened, SDC and George, he really had a master plan. And so before the things changed, we had entered into our first partnership together, SDC and Walnut Way. And it was a little over $1 million project to take a certain number of properties and turn them around in the area. And so right when we were working to collaborate and move together, you know, things changed. And then, as you all know, the organization dissolved. But what we really want to do is be able to, we can't cover all of that work, but that work around healthy homes, stabilizing housing is the piece of work that we want to contribute to. And we want to see a better job at the state level around coordination of agency resources, the municipal level as well. And so we're building a base around that so that we can influence that space the way we've discussed these other areas of work.
Now, you all, did you all have a house over there on, is that 17th Street or 16th Street?
Yep. That's the flagship. That's the home. That's the house where everything actually started, 2240 North 17th. Still there, still live and vibrant. But we also have the Innovation and Wellness Commons, which is a two-phase project that was completed in 2022. It's the newer property and the restored property, you know, right there across the street from Gauss on 16th and 17th in North. But yeah, the area is still active, 100%. We recently, 2 years ago, got a neighborhood improvement district in the area. So Lindsay Heights has neighborhood improvement district number 12. It's been up for now probably 3 years. What's unique and important about that is in a neighborhood where people say a lot of times people don't care, or it's a lot of apathy. To be a part of the NID, every homeowner has to contribute $50 to a pot of funds. And those dollars are used and governed by the residents themselves to drive their own community projects. So over the last 3 years, residents, owner occupants themselves in that area have raised more than $500,000 to contribute to housing and, you know, quality of life projects in the area. So when we talk about governance, we community governance, when we talk about coalition, when we talk about advocacy work upstream, you know, it's a lot of stories and a lot of work happening on the ground now that it's not necessarily fully in the narrative. But that's slowly changing, as we see with issues like data center, you know, the water issues continue to rise and otherwise.
What, in terms of, there's a lot of development going on there in that Lindsay Heights area, correct?
Definitely on the residential housing front. There's definitely under the mayor's initiative to get more affordable housing built. We definitely have a number of houses going up in our area and all of the neighborhoods, you know, that are pretty contiguous, you know, connected. The borders each other over there on the north side. So primarily it is the housing that's going up, but just in terms of larger commercial projects, there is one just outside of Lindsay Heights in Bronzeville, across the street from Wendy's, that newer development is going up there. But real quick, Keith, what's interesting, one of the other interesting things about it is that St. Anne's Intergenerational Center is for sale too right now.
On North Avenue?
Yeah, believe it or not, right?
Right.
That building was built 10 years ago for maybe $25 million.
Mm-hmm.
That building is for sale right now, and it you know, substantially lower. The only reason I raise that is around context for the area. Then you go another block and you look at the Sears development, and you see the Sears development is still in limbo. And nothing has turned around with that. So when you move up or down, you know, that part of North Avenue, you're looking at, you know, some real distressed commercial property, including the former Self-Help Bank. And so when we think about the SDC piece, it's the closest parcel that's next to us. It has that history around the work that we do. It already has a substantial amount of solar on the property. What we'll be doing is using tax credit to expand that solar array to where we'll be able to produce enough power to cover the energy needs of the facility, but also have access power that we could either distribute or reallocate to folks who have affordability issues as part of our bigger strategy for energy sovereignty and being able to really have our own infrastructure around energy affordability, while we're also advocating for the policies and law changes that need to happen for it to be fair for everyone, no matter where they are in the state.
Well, good luck on that, man. I mean, anything we can to be able to stabilize that community even more. That community is really historic. There's a lot of people I know that lived in that neighborhood and just seeing the work that's being done on there. So again, tell us about Saturday.
So yeah, Saturday, the 27th, we're having Vote with Wisdom gubernatorial forum at North Division. Want everybody seated around 10:30. Doors will open at 9:30 or so. There'll definitely be a little bit of reception, but we'll be well organized and helping people get to their seats and prepared. We have Shannon Sims, who's the moderator. All the Democratic serious candidates will be there. They have already answered questions around the issues that are important to us. Those answers to those questions are currently on the Walnut Way website, walnutway.org. And we're encouraging everybody to come on and show up so that we could demonstrate, you know, once again, like we did at Juneteenth, which was, you know, all the feedback about that was beautiful. You know, who we are and our intention that we're going to place in this election. And again, just another shout out to all of the senior housing, Clinton Rose. Book your transportation now through the county transportation so that you could be ready to show up on Saturday. We'll be ready for all of the seniors. And so we're just looking forward to having everybody out. And we're going to continue, you know, to put action behind our words in this work. And Keith, appreciate you and the team for having me today.
Man, appreciate you always, man. Always insightful, always enlightening. And you never lost for words. So appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Hey, y'all, before we get out of here, just came across the wire. Clive Davis passed today. People know, and again, this is Black Music Month, and the people that he signed, everybody know I'm a big Earth, Wind & Fire fan. Well, he was the guy that signed Earth, Wind & Fire to Columbia Records. You know, obviously the work he did around Aretha Franklin or with Aretha Franklin, the work he did with Whitney Houston to make her just the global superstar that he was. And then if you just like a general sense of music, just people like the Eagles and Neil Young. So Clive Davis, he is, do the math on this, 1932. So he just turned 94. On April 4th of this year. So yeah, Clive Davis. And then those folks who might follow the economy and things financial, Alan Greenspan died. He was 100 years old, many, many years chair of the Federal Reserve. So man, that's something. But Clive Davis, he was an operator. But when you look at the impact that he's had on Black music, and the story around how Earth, Wind & Fire even got to Columbia Records was that Warner Brothers, and they did their first two albums on Warner Brothers. And I want to say that Sweetback's Badass Song was also, that soundtrack was done on Warner Brothers. I know they did two songs on that soundtrack. They were dissatisfied because Warner Brothers didn't know what to do with them. They weren't a traditional Black act. And so it was... their manager, Mr. Cavallo, he went to Clive Davis, said, I got this group I want you to hear. The rest is history. And so he signed, actually, he didn't sign Earth, Wind & Fire. He signed Maurice White, but Earth, Wind & Fire. So when you look at that, but those just two groups that I know, or two musical acts that were really, really influential or had impact in Black music was Earth, Wind & Fire. Now, you know, Whitney had her controversies in terms of, you know, was she too pop? I never understood that. I think if you're in the record business, the idea is to sell records, right? So if you're able to expand your audience, you want to expand your audience. So Mr. Clive Davis, wow, 94 years old. And the fact that he would die during Black Music Month, kind of ironic. All right. Right out.
Yes, sir.
Man, how was your Father's Day? I didn't get a chance to ask.
Man, Father's Day was great, man. I got a chance to chill and relax and just, you know, spend some time reflecting. And so, yeah, man, it was good, man.
I always love my mama.
Yeah, right. Where's the song for the daddy?
There's a song for the daddy. Color Him Love.
Color Him Father.
Yeah, come by the Winstons, right? Yeah, there was one, but when not all those mama songs out there, you know, we had songs like Papa Was a Rolling Stone.
Right. Wherever he laid his head was his home. And when he died.
No, that ain't how you do it.
And when he died. No, when he died.
Didn't he die?
Didn't he die?
Hey, Clark, how would, yes, sir.
You see the right here what somebody said?
Mm-mm. Man, you know what? I couldn't pull up the chat.
Oh, Mr. Perez, why are you not at work, but you at Juneteenth?
Well, he was at work at Juneteenth.
I was at work at Juneteenth. It was just I'm telling you something, man, boy.
That's happened to know that.
I was working, and I don't know if y'all noticed at the end, but I had to separate Will and Michelle. They was going hard, man. I was like, okay. But see, I had suggested to both of them, I said, you know, we should do a Wednesday program probably in the afternoon where, you know, we would come on and they could do point, counterpoint. Then Michelle said, you'd have to referee it. So I'd be in the middle of it. But yeah, man, they was.
I was telling the man, I said, man.
Yeah, on Juneteenth, I was going like, ooh. But you know what? That's the beauty of WNOV.
Yeah.
The diversity of voices. Somebody came by. What does NOV stand for? And what basically was that turning around the voice of the Negro? Yeah. And so Debo said Negro's own voice. And so our ability, and look, we're a diverse community, right? And it was something, and let me acknowledge Michelle, because Michelle said, you know, in spite of how her and Will might disagree on things, that Will really has the community at heart. They both do. Yeah. And so I think that I think that's healthy. I really doubt some people, they just want everybody to think the same way. I don't know how healthy that is, because sometimes we get so locked into a way that we're thinking, there might be some other light out there that we didn't, because we just shut it down because, you know, we just this thing. So I thought it was interesting. It was at the end.
I think they should do it again because then nobody get to see it or hear it.
Yeah, I just think, and two really, really, really bright minds, you know, yes. People don't know this, that Will Martin was a history major, you know, so, you know, you had that conversation, it's an intellectual conversation. We're not always going to agree. And that people find themselves in situations, but I think the conversation is healthy, right? We got a caller, we good.
Nope, it's time for us to get up out of here, Jack.
Hey, man, I'm glad we were there. Good to see y'all, man. It makes
good
it so
to see
much
you
easier.
Too.
And,
and good to see you too.
let me thank all the ADA accommodations that's being made for me at this point. I'm looking forward to getting back in the studio.
One last thing, man. When you get a chance to see your boy, man, I'm going to press your boy. Because I came ready to hoop. I had my joggers on. I was ready to go. And your boy come in, man, looking like Slick Rick and them. He come sliding in. He didn't want none of this pressure, man. We built all this up to hoop, and he didn't want
to. And I had forgot hoop. All about it right out until I was watching. They were doing a report. I think it was Channel 12. And they had an aerial view of the kids doing their little tournament at Rose Park, and I'm going,
I was ready to go, but then when I brought it to him, he gonna wave me off like he was ready. He didn't want no pressure, man. He came all fly and stuff, man. Sunglasses on, he was dipped. He didn't want no
I'm
going
to go
man.
Take those kids hoop in the back in the alley and bring it up
here. Yeah, bring it up here, man. Put it on the side of the street, and me and DJ going to go at it, man. The first
you guys got a chance to meet Linda, so.
Yeah. The excellent young lady, man. But that still don't take away from DJ running from this belt to tail that I was going to put on him. But that's
and again, let me thank Rhonda, and let me thank Kennedy. You know, they made it possible for me to be there. So people said I wasn't at Juneteenth. I was at Juneteenth. Thank you very much. Hey, y'all, the good Lord willing, the creek. Oh, let me thank Mr. Antonio Butts. The good Lord willing, creek don't rise. Hope to talk to everybody tomorrow. And as always, go from this place in peace.